Hello, my name is Paul Shaw. This is Type Radio from New York. Now we're talking. This is from Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon. It's all about Slothrop, the hero of the book, and he's meeting with his girlfriend, his English girlfriend in London, at her flat where her landlady loves very strange candies. And for some reason, it's always been the funniest part of the book for me.
Type Radio.
Mrs. Quodes is up three dark flights, with a dome of faraway St. Paul's out its kitchen window, visible in the smoke of certain afternoons. And the lady herself, tiny in a rose plush chair in the sitting room by the wireless, listening to Primo Scala's accordion band. She looks healthy enough. On the table, though, is her crumpled chiffon handkerchief. Feathered blots of blood in and out the convolutions like a floral pattern. "You were here when I had that horrid quotidian egg," she recalls Slothrop, "the day we brewed the wormwood tea." Sure enough, the very taste now rising through his shoe soles, taking him along. They're reassembling. It must be outside his memory. Cool, clean interior, girl and woman, independent of his shorthand of stars. So many fading-faced girls, windy canal sides, bedsitters, bus stop goodbyes. How can he be expected to remember? But this room has gone on clarifying. Part of whoever he was inside it has kindly remained, stored quiescent these months outside of his head, distributed through the grainy shadows, the grease-hazy jars of herbs, candy, spices, all the Compton Mackenzie novels on the shelf, glassy ambrotypes of her late husband Austin, night-dusted inside gilded frames up on the mantel where last time Michaelmas, daisies greeted and razzled from a little Sev vase she and Austin found together one Saturday long ago in a Wardour Street shop. "He was my good health," she often says. "Since he passed away, I've had to become all but an outright witch in pure self-defense." From the kitchen comes the smell of limes, freshly cut and squeezed. Darlene's in and out of the room, looking for different botanicals, asking where the cheesecloths got to. "Tyrone, help me just reach down that. No, next to it, the tall jar. Thank you, love." Back into the kitchen and a creak of starch, a flash of pink. "I'm the only one with a memory around here," Mrs. Quode sighs. "We help each other, you see." She brings out from behind its cretonne camouflage a great bowl of candies. "Now," beaming at Slothrop, "here, wine jellies. They're pre-war." "Now I remember you, the one with the graft, the Ministry of Supply." But he knows from last time that no gallantry can help him now. After that visit, he wrote home to Nalene. "English are kind of weird when it comes to the way things taste, Mom. They aren't like us. It might be the climate. They go for things we would never dream of. Sometimes it's enough to turn your stomach, boy. The other day I had one of these things they call wine jellies. That's their idea of candy, Mom. Figure out a way to feed some to that Hitler, and I bet you the war would be over tomorrow." Now again, he finds himself checking out these ruddy gelatin objects, nodding, he hopes amiably, at Mrs. Quode. They have the names of different wines written on them in bas-relief. "Just a touch of menthol, too," Mrs. Quode, popping one into her mouth. "Delicious." Slothrop finally chooses one that says Lafitte Rothschild and stuffs it on into his kisser. "Oh, yeah, yeah, it's great. If you really want something peculiar, try the Bernkastler Doctor. Oh, aren't you the one who brought me those lovely American slimy elm things? Maple tasting with a touch of sassafras? Slippery elms. Jeepers, I'm sorry, I ran out yesterday." Darlene comes in with a steaming pot and three cups on a tray. "What's that?" Sloth up a little quickly here. "You don't really want to know, Tyrone." "Quite right." After the first sip, wishing she'd use more lime juice or something to kill the basic taste, which is ghastly bitter. "These people are really insane." "No sugar, Natch." He reaches in the candy bowl, comes up with a black, ribbed licorice drop. It looks safe. But just as he's biting in, Darlene gives him and it a peculiar look. "Great timing," this girl says. "Oh, I thought we got rid of all those." A Blythe Gilbert and Sullivan ingenues, "these, years ago." At which point, Slothrop is encountering this dribbling liquid center which tastes like mayonnaise and orange peels. "You've taken the last of my marmalade surprises," cries Mrs. Quode, having now, with conjurer's speed, produced an egg-shaped confection of pastel green studded all over with lavender nonpareils. Just for that, I shan't let you have any of these marvelous rhubarb creams. Into her mouth it goes, the whole thing. Serves me right, Slothrop, wondering just what he means by this. Sipping herb tea to remove the taste of the mayonnaise candy. Oops, but that's a mistake. Right, here's his mouth filling once again with horrible alkaloid desolation. All the way back to the soft palate where it digs in. Darlene, pure nightingale compassion, is handing him a hard red candy molded like a stylized raspberry. Mmm, which oddly enough even tastes like raspberry, though it can't begin to take away that bitterness. Impatiently he bites into it, and in the act knows, fucking idiot, he's been had once more. There it comes pouring out onto his tongue the most god-awful crystalline concentration of, geez, it must be pure nitric acid. Oh, mercy, that's really sour. Hardly able to get the words out, he's so puckered up, exactly the sort of thing Hop Harrigan used to pull to get Tank Tinker to quit playing his ocarina. A shabby trick then, and twice as reprehensible coming from an old lady who's supposed to be one of our allies. Shit, he can't even see, it's up his nose. And whatever it is won't dissolve, just goes on torturing his shriveling tongue and crunches like ground glass among his molars. Mrs. Quode is meantime busy savoring, bite by dainty bite, a cherry quinine petit four. She beams at the young people across the candy bowl. Slothrop, forgetting, reaches again for his tea. There's no graceful way out of this now. Darlene has brought a couple three more candy jars down off the shelf, and now he goes plunging like a journey to the center of some small hostile planet, into an enormous bonbon, chomp, through the mantle of chocolate, to a strongly eucalyptus-flavored fondant, finally into a chorus in very tough grape gum Arabic. He fingernails a piece of this out from between his teeth and stares at it for a while. It is purple in color. Now you're getting the idea, Mrs. Quode, waving at him a marbled conglomerate of ginger root, butterscotch, and aniseed. You see, you also have to enjoy the way it looks. Why are Americans so impulsive? Well, mumbling, usually we don't get anything more complicated than Hershey bars. Oh, try this, hollers Darlene, clutching her throat and swaying against him. God, it must really be something, doubtfully, taking this nasty-looking brownish novelty, an exact quarter-scale replica of a Mills-type hand grenade, lever pin and everything. One of a series of patriotic candies put out before sugar was quite so scarce. Also including, he notices, peering into the jar, a 45 Webley cartridge of green and pink striped taffy, a 6-ton earthquake bomb of some silver-flecked blue gelatin, and a licorice bazooka. Go on, then, Darlene actually taking his hand with the candy in it and trying to shove it into his mouth. Was just, you know, looking at it, the way Mrs. Quode suggested. And no fair squeezing it, Tyrone. Under its tamarind glaze, the Mills bomb turns out to be luscious pepsin-flavored nougat. Chock full of tangy candied cubeb berries and a chewy camphor gum center. It is unspeakably awful. Slothrop's head begins to reel with camphor fumes. His eyes are running. His tongue's a hopeless holocaust. Cubeb? He used to smoke that stuff.
Poisoned,
he's able to croak. Show a little backbone, advises Mrs. Quode. Yes, Darlene, through tongue-softened sheets of caramel. Don't you know there's a war on? Here now, love, open your mouth. Through the tears, he can't see it too well, but he can hear Mrs. Quode across the table going, yum, yum, yum. And Darlene giggling. It is enormous and soft like a marshmallow, but somehow, unless something is now going seriously wrong with his brain, it tastes like gin. What's this? He inquires thickly. A gin marshmallow, says Mrs. Quode. Oh, that's nothing. Have one of these. His teeth in some perverse reflex, crunching now through a hard, sour gooseberry shell into a wet, spurting unpleasantness of, he hopes it's tapioca, little glutinous chunks of something all saturated with powdered cloves. More tea, Darlene suggests. Slothrop is coughing violently, having inhaled some of that clove filling. Nasty cough, Mrs. Quode, offering a tin of that least believable of English cough drops, the Megazone. Darlene, the tea is lovely. I can feel my scurvy going away. Really, I can. The Megazone is like being belted in the head with a Swiss Alp. Menthol icicles immediately begin to grow from the roof of Slothrop's mouth. Polar bears seek toenail holds up the freezing, frosty grape alveolar clusters in his lungs. It hurts his teeth too much to breathe, even through his nose, even necktie loosened, with his nose down inside the neck of his olive drab t-shirt. Benzoine vapors seep into his brain. His head floats in a halo of ice. Even an hour later, the megazone still lingers, a mint ghost in the air. Slothrop lies with Darlene, the disgusting English candy drill, a thing of the past, his groin now against her warm bottom. The one candy he did not get to taste, one Mrs. Quode withheld, was the Fire of Paradise, that famous confection of high price and protean taste, salted plum to one, artificial cherry to another, sugared violets, Worcestershire sauce, spiced treacle. Any number of like descriptions, positive, terse, never exceeding two words in length, resembling the descriptions of poison and debilitating gases found in training manuals, sweet and sour eggplant being perhaps the lengthiest to date. The Fire of Paradise today is operationally extinct, and in 1945 can hardly be found, certainly nowhere among the sunlit shops and polished windows of Bond Street or waste Belgravia. But every now and then one will surface in places which deal usually other merchandise than sweets, at rest, back inside big glass jars, clouded by the days, along with objects like itself, sometimes only one candy to a whole jar, nearly hidden in the ambient tourmalines and German gold, carved ebony finger stalls from the last century, pegs, valve pieces, threaded hardware from obscure musical instruments, electronic components of rosin and copper that the war and its glutton, ever-nibbling intake is not yet found and licked back into its darkness. Places where the motors never come close enough to be loud, and there are trees outside along the street. Inner rooms and older faces developing under light, falling through a skylight yellower later in the year.
www.typeradio.org